she said, "Do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover."
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Cider Nation podcast, the unique baseball podcast. Brought to you by J. Birdie Baseball Company. Get your Canadian baseball apparel at jbirdie.ca and make sure to follow them on social media. Today, we have Savannah Bananas sidearm right-handed pitcher, Christian Dearman.
No, thanks for coming on, Christian.
Oh, you got it. You know, it's an honor to be here.
I guess first things first, could you talk to us a little bit about what sports looked like for you growing up?
Oh, you know, sports was great. We grew up in a really big sports family, very competitive, but no one really played college athletics at all. You know, I was really the first one to go and do that. Everyone kind of was the high school stars, and then we all went to like firefighters, pilots, etc., like that. So like sports was a big like family unit like thing growing up, but you know, we never really thought of it as making a career out of it until I came along, you know. So yeah. It was great watching all the Dolphins games, you know, watching all Marlins games and the Heat games growing up in South Florida. You know, some people say that we don't have the best fan culture, but I had a blast whenever I'd go, and it was a great time.
And then, you know, I guess a little more specifically, Christian, like, what did it look like baseball wise for you and kind of recruiting wise and like kind of, you know, moving into college?
You know, I was always that kid on my team that was never the tallest, the strongest, throw the hardest, hit the ball the farthest, nothing like that. You know, my dad coached me to rec ball until I was about 13. I played some travel ball here and there, you know, loved it, loved the game of baseball, but I didn't really get that love for it until I went to Cooperstown, you know, and I had saw how great it was like to be in that area and see all these legends that had been there for being the greatest of their time. So when I got to high school was when I really started to work hard at the sport, because honestly, I wanted to be there. I wanted to be one of the best to ever play this game, because I have that competitive mindset growing up with, you know, three or four brothers all around me, my friends and my little brother. You know, it was fun playing all these sports, wiffle ball every single day in the backyard. I really gained that love for baseball just being around all my friends, and they just pushed me to go to high school, try out for the team, and I made it. And my dad was my coach, actually, but he wanted to cut me, which is the funny part. He just said, like, you know, nothing in life is guaranteed, so you have to, like, really earn it and work hard at it. So got to high school. I was able to make the team still with my own merit, and I was able to get one offer to go to Anderson University after that, which is in South Carolina. And, you know, that was the start of what is going to be a crazy journey I'm about to tell you.
Well, that's fair. That's why you're on here.
Yeah. You know, man, looking back at it and looking through high school and seeing like how far this game has put me when I just was playing it for fun, it's really breathtaking and amazing, because I got to college and it was a big deal being at Anderson University for my family, because I was the first athlete to go to college and play a sport and have a scholarship.
Yeah.
But I learned very quickly that I was not, let's say, as talented as some of the guys that were there. So because I was an over the top pitcher, you know, I threw about 83 to 86. Okay. I thought that was pretty good. But freshman coming in, you know, these guys all ahead of me. I was the only freshman pitcher. So all these guys were way older than me, transfers, and they were throwing 88 to like 94, 95. And I was like, holy cow, how do I make this team? So I kind of dropped down a little bit. Yeah. The ball started coming in harder. You know, I started to get my velo up, and it just wasn't good enough for Anderson University, unfortunately. And I got released that fall, and I was kind of homeless without a college, that next spring in 2016. And then all of a sudden I was playing in just the summer ball league with my friends and for the South Florida Hooks. And it was just for some guys fresh out of college that are looking to go somewhere. And I was just there because they needed a body. And my buddy came to one of the games, saw me pitching, and he said, dude, I could get you a tryout at Tallahassee Community College. And I was like, get out of here, man. They're not going to take me. I'm just out here, you know, doing the thing. I was already going to community college down here, Broward College, ready to start life, possibly be a firefighter, you know. And yeah. Then he gave me this tryout. And I went there, worst bullpen of my life. Like, I know I had told you guys this story, but it was the worst bullpen of my life at CCC. And for some reason, at the end of it, I got pulled into Coach Mack's office, which I'm so grateful for. And he had offered me right there on the spot. He said, we would like to have you as a full scholarship here. And I was so stunned when he said this because, again, it was terrible. I couldn't sleep all night because I was so nervous. And my dad was sitting right next to me, and I thought this was it. And all of a sudden, like, my dad goes, we're going to take that offer for sure. I couldn't even speak. I was stunned, man. And it was great because I got to TCC. It was where I met a bunch of my good friends right now. And that first year, I was going all out. I was balling. And I was throwing sidearm. I was sitting about 88, 89. And nice. I was freshman, looking to be like All-American. And yeah. About a third into the year, the unexpected happened. And I was pitching it all. I started in the second inning of the game. Our starter was having a tough go. Pitched all the way to ninth. And I think it was a 4-3 ball game. And with two outs, very last inning, I heard pop, pop. And it was right here. Actually, I'll show you guys the score right next to my logo. Oh, but I had tore my right latissimus dorsi tendon. And it was so weird because I thought I got shot on the mound and I immediately went down from the pain. All air came out of me. The guy hit a ground ball right past my face and we got the third out. But yeah, it was crazy. I was down on the ground and all of a sudden, I just remember getting picked up and carried off to the sideline. And from that moment on, I was in the hospital and everything just happened so fast. I was in so much pain, like in and out of like even thinking about it. And the doctor comes up to me and my parents later that day. And because my parents drove 7 hours straight when it happened, they drove right up. And I had spent the night, you know, just kind of with my arm tied together. Because it hurt even to let it go. And I had no feeling, really. So I went to the doctor. We got checked out the next morning. And the guy came in and said, listen, you're going to have to probably put this baseball thing to the side. Because you'll be lucky if you have 30% strength in your arm for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for a doctor to come in and tell someone that, and especially an athlete.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's tough because it's like Everything you worked for is just gone right there in a second. But I was so mad at him for saying that. I said, watch me. I said, watch me. You have no idea who I am. And they did the surgery right away. It was 100% tear. And I was the third person to ever have this kind of injury in baseball. And the first was Jake Peavy. And the second was Andres Nunez, and I have been teammates with both of them now. Andres, I played with him at FIU, and PV with the Bananas. So we completely did the surgery. It was successful. I got to rehab. I spent every single night in a recliner for a year and a half at Tallahassee with my dad sleeping right next to me in my room. And my roommates just all in their other room. So it was kind of funny. My dad was living with us a little bit, but he was my caretaker. Wow. And then during the summer, like the guys would take care of me that were there. But, you know, throughout that whole time, all I kept thinking was getting back on that mound. I didn't think about anything really negative. I was upset because I was watching my teammates play And I was just like, oh man, I could help them right now. They need me. Cause that freshman year, we ended after that had happened, it just seemed like a lot of stuff started going downhill for us. And when I came back that sophomore year, it was very powerful. It really lifted me to try to be a captain for the team, you know, because I had just gone through all that adversity of the year before and like watching my team kind of struggle. So being able to come back and not even have to say anything, but being able to come back from that led my team like to just power beyond anything that was going on in their lives, you know, and we became the best version that second year, my sophomore year, when I was able to come back and I had a career year. I think it was like a 1.6 ERA. I lost that fireman of the year to my throwing partner.
That'll happen.
It happens, you know. That's a bullpen life, you know. But throughout that, so a year, it took a year and a half to come back, but I was able to do it. And, you know, it was great because I thought that JUCO run would be it. You know, I got my AA at TCC. I had no offers really coming in despite having a good year, being able to still come back. I was about A5, A6, still recovering, like getting up to A7 a couple times, but no one really wanted it. And I was like, I get it. You know, I still thought I could play and I would take anything that was coming my way. But fortunately for me, I had a mentor on the team and his name's Kyle Baumholtz. And his cousin had worked and he was an assistant coach at FIU, which was right by my house here. So he had made a call and his cousin took a look at me. His name's Jared Goodwin. And Jared gave me a chance. He gave me a walk-on opportunity. So I was able to come home and play some baseball at FIU. And lo and behold, FIU was it. My first year, I learned a lot about pitching. That D1 level, they could hit the ball. You can't throw it down the middle. But, you know, it was a learning experience. We struggled. You know, it was the first time I was ever on a true losing team and had a losing season. So even getting that adversity, it made me start to not like baseball too much because of how much I had gone through with those 3 years of college already, you know? And then after that junior year at FIU where everyone had struggled, I came into summer ball. And I started at Waynesboro in the Valley League. And I had did really well, but our team knocked off in first round playoffs. So I still had like 3 weeks left in summer. And I was like, well, I guess I could just go home and stuff. And right when I was packing to go home, I got a call from the Bananas. And it was my pitching coach in college at Tallahassee. His name's Corey Pye. And he was like, hey, man, we're headed into playoffs and we need a guy. All right. And he's like, I saw you had a good year. We want to see if you could come play for us. And I was like, all right. Yeah, sure. Sounds cool. What's the team name? And he said, the Bananas. We're the Bananas. And I was like, what? What are you talking about, man? And he was like, yeah, we're the Bananas. You know, you're going to come in. It's a whole different kind of baseball. You're going to love this kind of energy. It's perfect for you. Trust me. And I was like, all right, I like it. Let's do it. So I didn't look up anything about it because I just knew it was in Savannah. I got the address I was supposed to go to and I headed out. And it was kind of like just a leap of faith thing. I just want to play some more ball. And I got there, moved into the host family's house. They were super excited to have me. It was like, oh, you're going to love it. They were like really jacking the whole thing up. And I was like, or juicing the whole thing up, I should say. And I was excited. And then I got to the field and realized that it was completely different vibe. Completely different vibe. It was an old school field. And there were so many people around already, like staff, all these people working hard because they were telling me it's sold out tonight. I'm like, oh my gosh, sold out game. Wow, it's my first game ever. Here we go. Yeah, I had mostly played at in front of 1,000 people at the most. That was about it because not really many people would come to our games in college.
No.
But yeah, so opening night was about 4,500 and I felt it. You could feel those that energy just coming onto the field. I'm like, dang, this is cool. But the thing that shook me the most was that before the game, they had told me my role during the game. And they said I was going to be dancing in the second inning, throwing t-shirts in the first, giving out roses in the fourth, doing a hey baby dance at the end of the fourth. And we're going to do at the end of the seventh, we're going to do a little dancing on the dugout and, you know, take a shirt off. I was like, what are you guys talking about? What am I going to pitch? And they're like, oh, don't worry about that. You'll pitch when we need you to. I was like, all right, let's do it. And I hop right into the game, learn all the dances. Really big shout out to all the guys that were there before me. And they taught me, they brought me in, showed me the ropes, and it was absolutely electric. I fell in love with it the first day. And lo and behold, every single year after that, every summer, they had kept asking me to come back. So we had lost in the playoffs, unfortunately, that first summer I was in. So, yeah, so I hadn't been winning much this first 3 years, but it's okay. So we come into my senior year at FIU, and COVID happens.
Yeah.
It just completely crushed season. We were undefeated. I had a zero ERA going in. We were about 7 games into the game. So we're all feeling good. We're feeling juiceful, you know, getting ranked by the Baseball America. And
yeah.
It was just the end of it. And said, so our coach came onto the bus, said, hey guys, our season just got canceled. And we were on the bus heads to the airport to go play against Charlotte. And it was at that moment, like everything stood still because everyone on the bus didn't know how to react. We were like, well, what does this mean for everyone? Because this is new. This is 2020. This is COVID. I don't, like, because of an illness, we're now done. And we get it completely. So we hopped off. All of us packed our stuff off, went home. And a couple weeks later, I was told that I no longer have a home at FIU. And for me to continue to play baseball, it has to be somewhere else. And so that was another shocker. So I had been told already a couple times in my life, just going through college, that I will never play baseball again.
Yeah.
And every single time, it just got me more fired up and more fueled. And then, like, it was coming to the point where I was not enjoying the game at all. And I was just set on, you know, proving people wrong, like, proving that I could do it. And, you know, just being in the position I was at, that was enough. That was really great being able to just come back. But I just wanted more and more and more because I just felt like that there was more for me. And then I kept going back to the bananas, having a great time, never really thinking anything of it. You know, each of these summers, like after my senior year, we had COVID happen. We were able to play, but we had a lot of restrictions. It was completely different. And it was still fun. It was a good time, but, you know, it didn't feel the same. So it still was a little bit shaky there. I had gone now. I was without a home, and I didn't know what I was going to do because we were done with the bananas and that summer ball. And I had just was talking around trying to find a home for myself. And for the love of God, honestly, he had helped me out because two of my friends from FIU that had also gotten released told me about an opportunity at St. Thomas University to go and play. And I took it right away because, you know, they had offered to pay for my master's going in. You know, they said I'd be an everyday kind of pitcher. I was like, it was everything I wanted. And I was going to be really appreciated there. And I was going to enjoy my last year, you know, and get my master's degree, start life. All right, because honestly, didn't even expect to get that far, but I would keep doing it. So we did it, played well throughout the year, and it went well. You know, I did everything, but didn't get that call from MLB, didn't get that call to keep going on. But I did get another call, and it was from the bananas again, right after my first year at St. Thomas. And they said, hey, man, you want to come play? I know that you're kind of done, but let's do it. I was like, sure. Come on, Pi. Let's go. And went there. We were playing when we were playing really well that summer, my very last summer of playing baseball ever. And we just kept going. And we had won 12 straight games to start it off with. And everyone was feeling the juice. All of a sudden, we are at the end of the season. And we're in the last game. We're in the championship game against the supposed to be best team, the champs that won it the year before, who absolutely were heckling the heck out of us because no one wants to get beat by the team that dances. That whole year, but we were so dominant. And we ended up going 40-10 and winning that championship game. And that was the first time I had ever won anything. So right in that moment, it was like everything came together and all that struggle was for this greatness that just happened. But then I realized there's so much more. Because after that, Jesse Cole came up to me and said, "Hey, we're starting a pro team." And I'm like, "Dude, how far is this bananas thing going to be able to go?" And they said, "To the moon, man, to the moon." So I'm here. I'm juiced up. I'm like, "All right, now I have a job. I'm able to play some more baseball. I'm still getting my master's degree at St. Thomas. Feeling good. All right. I don't think this is going to last long because they still have the summer ball league going on the very next year. So I did fall ball with the bananas in 2021. And it was cool. We did a little breakfast bowl against the Macon Bacon where they had recruited a team of just anyone who wanted to play. And it was a bunch of the dudes on the bananas that had just graduated from college and some guys that had played on our One City World Tour, which was in that spring, who were older dudes. And so everyone just hopped on. It was like this big men's league all free for all right now. Yeah. So then after that, you know, everyone started selling out the games. We had been sold out since 2016 and it just made sense to do the World Tour. And I happened to do the first World Tour with the bananas going to 7 different cities. I'm pretty sure it was 7. Yeah. And we had 12 games and it was cool, you know, because now going from that and to advance into where we are now, wow, is kind of lost where I was at right there.
Well, so like when you were first on the bananas though, like there was like it was like playing like in a college summer league though, right?
Yeah, and it was playing
kind of evolved, hey? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then now obviously with the pro tour, it's just like it's just grown, hey?
It's grown so much that, you know, we're getting guys that are leaving their indie ball leagues and leaving minor league systems to come and play with us. Like these tryouts that we're having, like the dudes and the talent that's coming out is absolutely incredible. And what we have done, like with the organization and how far we've gone, like proves that the players are just going to keep getting better because now we're even in the Hall of Fame.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome. And the craziest part is we're in the Hall of Fame, but we had a losing season this year.
Really?
Yeah. Party Animals beat us by one game. You know, that final game in Cooperstown. They had some good players, but we're recruiting some guys for this next Firefighters team as well that we have coming up.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. It's so going to be there's 3 teams?
Yeah, it's 3 teams right now. And we're going to all be playing against each other. Party Animals are going to have their own separate tour that they'll be playing against Firefighters. And they'll also play against us a couple of games. So it'll be cool.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, kind of cool, I'm sure, for yourself, too. But even just, you know, to see some of the former MLB guys coming in kind of seems like that's just been growing, right? Like who was like Johnny Damon, like you mentioned, PV. Like there's been a bunch, hasn't there?
Yeah. Like what I was blessed with big time this year, you know, was facing the MLB Players Association almost every game that they had played against us.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
We only played 3 games against them, but I had 2 starts, and they were both in Savannah. And I got to tell you, the way those guys bought into the game was so cool because they were just like kids in the backyard playing backyard baseball right there. Like,
yeah.
Damon was awesome. Johnny Gomes, guy I look up to. You know, having Hunter Pence was – right when he joined us, that was so cool in San Francisco. He loved it so much. But, you know, having the Players Association guys like Jeremy Guthrie coming out. Guthrie was a guy that I had watched growing up pitching. Him, Bronson Arroyo, like seeing these guys out there and playing banana ball, throwing a yellow baseball. Like, man, they're doing the same thing as me. And they're looking at us like they're trying to learn how to even be better at this. Like, what am I supposed to teach a Cy Young winner? You know, but they're so bought in and they had such a great vibe to them because they had realized that this game is for everyone. You know, traditional baseball, it's a family sport, but it's really focused on the father and son, you know. But the way of banana ball is we have father, son, mother, and daughter. So the whole family could come out. So, and that's what they did. They would bring all their families out. We would get to meet a bunch of these guys. You know, Michael Morris grew up in my area and I was getting to face him when I struck him out. So yeah, there was a lot of Marlins on the teams, like John Buck, you know.
Yeah.
Me and Buck had a good conversations. And, you know, I struck him out twice. He's going to hate that I'm saying this, but it was great. It felt really good, you know, because he did hit one really far foul off me in a bat.
And then I guess brief, like, could you explain, you know, just some of the rules in banana ball for anyone that's maybe not familiar?
Yeah. So some of our rules include, we have, if a fan catches a fly ball, this is my favorite rule, the batter is out.
Batter's out. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's my favorite rule. My least favorite rule is when ball four happens, it turns into a sprint instead of a walk. So instead of the batter just walking to first base, he gets to sprint as far as he can go, and every single fielder on the field has to touch that baseball in order to get him to stop. So it usually becomes double, but we've perfected our walk defense now to sometimes it's an out. It's about 50-50. It depends how hard the guy gets out of the box.
So they all have to touch it, hey?
Yep. Everyone on the field will go short, second, third, first, left, right, center. Boom. Got him. Yeah, it's a whole process. And also batters can't step out of the box, too. So our game, like every single one of our pitchers this year was able to throw a ball within 4 seconds, 4 or 5 seconds. Was the time period. So that pitch clock that Major League Baseball has, we actually had it side by side, and I was able to throw 4 pitches before the Major League pitcher threw one. It's like, it's happening so fast and nonstop. And then you got entertainment going on as well. And, you know, a lot of these rules favor pitchers, which I love. But at the same time, when you have a showdown, which is another one of our rules, so in the ninth inning, if the game is completely tied or if the time limit has run out, we go into a showdown. And what that is hitter versus pitcher and one fielder for the first round. If they hit the ball past the pitcher, it more than likely they're going to hit a home run. They're going to score, you know. But if someone hits an automatic home run, the game's over. And that team wins. Okay. That only happened one time in our whole history of playing banana ball, and it was this year where Reese Hampton actually hit a walk-off home run, and in the first round of showdowns, and we didn't even get to bat because the game was just over there. So usually it goes about 1 or 2 rounds, but at that second round, it's completely just hitter versus pitcher. And that's
just hit on.
Tough. You know, because at least in the first round we got a chance to throw him out with the outfielder or infielder hopefully being there and getting to stop the ball or get there in time. But man, that second round is tough, and that's just proves to be the most electric play in all of banana ball right there, because the game really comes down to this matchup right here. And we just added a new rule this year, which is called the golden batter rule. And a team can choose whatever batter to come and bat at any time in the game. Only one.
Okay.
Yeah. So a first rounder that the party animals have in Jake Skoll, you know, as soon if I strike him out in the bottom of the ninth inning with bases loaded and I get 2 outs, they're going to send him back up again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of like that, though.
I like it, though. It's definitely cool. You know, there was a lot of times in banana ball where, you know, the away team will put up a lot of runs in the first inning, and we have a point system. So the way that you score is that you have to win an inning. So let's say the away team scores 3 runs in the top half of the inning.
Yeah.
But the home team scores 4 in the bottom half. That's a walk-off right there. And we get 1 point.
Yeah, 1 point.
So, at the end of the game, whoever has the most points is the winner. But but we have to win every single inning. And no, it doesn't matter how many runs you score, because the away team could score 10 in the top half, and we could score nothing, and it's just 1 point.
It's just 1 point.
Yeah, it's just one point.
I like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it goes back and forth. But we could, and if we're the home team, all we need is one run if we get a shut out of a shutdown inning.
Yeah. So
that part's great. But when it comes to the ninth inning, every single run counts. So that's the tricky part.
That's okay. Uh-huh. So it's usually like, what does it look like kind of score wise?
It's usually give or take like, it's a lot of time, it's about a one point game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's been multiple times where the Party Animals will have four points, 5 points going into the ninth inning, and we only have two, but then we have came back and we win it 6-5, or we've lost 5-4 because we scored two runs, you know? So that ninth inning really, really makes it all out and so important.
Yeah, no, that's definitely like just that whole scoring system. Like, definitely kind of like it makes sense though. Like, I actually kind of like that though. Like, there's definitely times in baseball where it's done in the third inning, right? Or like,
exactly. I watched a game not too long ago, a playoff game, and they had scored 10 runs within the first three innings.
Yeah.
And that's a playoff game. And everyone knows the game's over now.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like,
yeah, the odds are just slim. Have you gotten pretty good feedback, like fan-wise? Like, they
love fans love it because at every single point of the game, you can't look down or you're going to miss something.
That's true.
You know, it's so fast-paced. There's so much entertainment going on. And then with this point system, for the fans that are really competitive in the game of baseball and want to see, like, wins and want to see that action, that baseball action, they're invested big time into this point scale and this point system.
Yeah. And I bet you, like, with that rule, like, they all bring gloves to the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you don't bring gloves to the game, you're doing it wrong, because there are so many opportunities for a fan to get a batter out. And we need all the help to get as pitchers.
That's awesome. No, it's very smart.
No, it is. It is.
Well, you know, and then you played a little bit, like, was it last year, like, indie ball? Like, you went and played, I remember you were saying, was it the United Shores?
Yeah, so in 2022 summer, I went and played in the United Shores Professional Baseball League, USPBL. And I played for the Mammoths, West Side Woolly Mammoths. It was my first real, like, the Bananas was my first pro ball experience, but this was my real first professional baseball experience, where it was like a whole system where you're getting paid for this and you have to be at the field certain times and really structured, and I liked it. You know, it was a cool league. It was a four team league. You know, we went to the same field every single day, didn't have to travel long hours. It was it was great, but you know, it was missing a little bit for me, because
I love the
aspect, but you know, the fans weren't as juiced up about it. I'm a performer, so a lot of people did not, let's say, like how I pitched. But, you know, it was effective. You know, I didn't throw as hard as a lot of these guys, but I was still an all-star at the end of that league.
Nice.
Because I think the mental game really worked for me. And I was able to get into people's heads with even just having fun out there. So it was great, but I definitely believe that banana ball is where I'm supposed to be at.
like, is that something like you probably, you know, like, do you have any thoughts of, like, you know, affiliated ball or indie ball or?
Yeah, I think everyone in affiliate ball and indie ball is a part of the grind right there. Yeah. And everyone there is so mentally tough to just be there, because it really is exactly what I said. It's a grind, and you're out there every single day trying to get better, trying to get that chance to get to that next level. Everyone wants to be the professional baseball player, MLB player, with that big name on your chest, that city on your chest. And like, because that's what you grew up watching, and those were the stars. So all these guys, I respect them so much, because it takes a lot of effort and time and patience, and only one person usually will get that call. Shoot, I think less than 10, no, less than 5 got that call when I was in that league last summer. So, yeah. You know, it's rare, and you really have to put your all into it. And sometimes you just have to be gifted.
Yeah, no, get that,
but gifted by getting either, you know, that opportunity, or maybe just having a juiced up arm that's like throwing 105. You know, a lot of these guys in the big leagues throwing 105. That's so unmatched.
It's crazy.
Man, but or you could be a sidearm pitcher and just be nasty.
Well, you know what? That's definitely what we talk about on the show too, right? Like, as much as the game is going velo, I mean, 100%, yeah. I get it. But, like, there's always going to be a need for guys to be funky out of the bullpen, though, 100%, right? Like,
you're exactly right.
That's the fun part with Sidearm Nation. As much as the game is going velocity, there's always going to be need for guys like that. So,
exactly. And what I'm realizing more and more is as I watch like these playoff games, and when I watch these banana ball games, the most important thing I see is you got to throw strikes. Because,
like
a lot of these guys, it's cool to throw hard, but if you don't throw a strike, man, you're just gonna walk the house. And then once you throw one down the middle that they're waiting for, it's gonna get teed off on, you know.
Yeah.
But and especially in banana ball, you know, a walk is a double.
Well, yeah, so that's
you got to be able to pound that zone and be crafty, make those guys swing and miss at stuff.
So I agree, some of the pitches that you throw, Christian, like, you know, like even just at the camp, you were, you know, trying some different moves or whatever. Yeah. Like, where does that all come from, or like, how, like.
Creativity.
Yeah, just
we're just trying out some new things, you know. A lot of stuff in banana ball is entertainment based, so if I could become the most entertaining pitcher in the world, more people will want to watch, because whenever we're on TV, 70% of the time it's on the pitcher, you know, and the broadcast is on the pitcher. So if you could do anything to get people's attention that are just scrolling by, it's really valuable and really important to our game, you know. But at the same time, I'll pitch normal a lot too, to strike these guys out, because they've seen me so many times I can't just like kick a ball up to myself and throw it down the middle because they know exactly what's coming. But that's cool.
Like, what is your favorite kind of whatever trick pitch or whatever that you've come up with?
You know, I call it the lightning wheel.
Okay.
And it's basically, I'll get the crowd clapping. All right. And when I'm doing this, I kind of do like a breakdancing spin move. So like I'll clap. And when I come down, I take my left knee to the ground and put my right foot on the rubber. And I do a spin, 360 spin, and then throw the ball from down low. And it's just like, it's like, what the heck's going on? It's like one of those breakdancing spins you do on the floor, and you just sling it in there.
I'm gonna say, like, that's something I should probably not even attempt, seeing as I got hurt twice just playing regular. Hey, just pitching normal and just
do it.
I'll leave that up to you, man.
You could try the one where it's called the Cristiano Dearman, where I just drop the ball. My left foot, kick it up to myself, catch and throw. That was awesome.
Well, yeah, and like all like the dancing choreography and stuff, like how often do you guys have to like practice that? Like, or is it kind of on the go? Or
so usually our day goes. We get to the field at 12 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game, and from 12 o'clock to about 4:30 is full of practice and rehearsal. And dance rehearsal. So we learn all of our celebrations, all our dance moves during that 1 to 2 o'clock time. Because as soon as we get there, we have lunch, you know, settle in. 1 to 2, we have rehearsal. And we learn everything. We go over all the choreography. And we just keep practicing it throughout that game day. You know, in BP, going through VIB at 4:30. 4:30 is kind of like where our VIB members, you know, they come onto the field, they pay early access to get tickets, they get they pay $100, I think, and they get to choose their seats wherever, and they get to meet all the players like before the game even starts.
Oh, nice.
My computer just was acting weird. But so at 4:30 is when we're fully in uniform, and then we go through another rehearsal in front of those fans and of all the stuff that we learned a couple hours earlier. So we have two rehearsals throughout the day, and then we hit it in the game and we try and nail it to the best of our ability. And honestly, we're getting pretty good at it where we could just pick it up on the fly.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Hey, it just like I don't know how you guys do it. I'm impressed.
Man, it shocks me, but it proves that baseball players might be the best athletes in the world.
I might have a personal opinion about that, but I agree.
Especially sidearm pitchers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you had many teammates that were sidearm submarine pitchers in your career?
You know, not many. And it's really shocking because the guys that I did have threw very hard.
Mm.
You know, like I had a guy named Danny Brown, who was sidearm pitcher at FIU, who was there before me, and he was sit about 90 miles per hour. He was like, he kept it really close to his body, though. He was really short arm sidearm with it and stuff.
Yeah.
But then another sidearmer I had, he was a lefty, and yeah, you know, he was throwing about like really, really low, really cross body, Josh Hader-ish. However, he didn't make the team. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
So I hadn't played with many, but it's such a unique style because every time I would face, like we would face those people, they'd carve us up every single time. And a lot of these guys would only throw about 80 to 84.
Yeah.
But there's so much movement and so much consistency in the strike zone with that movement that's hard to hit because you have that triangle happening where the sinker is breaking down, slider's going the other way, and we got changeup going straight like that. You know, it's really effective. And based on my stats alone with the USPBL last year, I'm never a big stat guy, but what I saw is I had the best swing and miss percentage in the whole league. And nice. I was one of three sidearmers in the league. So it proves to me, if you give it a little bit different of a look, you're going to be more effective. But I just never had guys that wanted to try it. A lot of the guys had been guys that were forced to drop down to that level, which I get, you want to make the team. That's what I was trying to do.
Yep.
But if they just tried it and tried to be more athletic with it, I think a lot of people would be very successful because it's a more natural kind of slot. You know, it feels a little bit easier on the arm and you could kind of throw more days, I feel like, throughout the week.
Yeah, it's definitely something you have to kind of fully commit to it too, right? I kind of just something I've noticed guys will maybe get asked to drop down and then still maybe fool around over the top. And don't get me wrong, there's some guys that can throw for multiple arm slots too, right? But, you know, if you have like a 9.5 ERA and you're over the top, like, there's probably a reason why you're being asked, right? Like,
absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Like, I tried to go from like three different slots this year, and every time I would go away from my original slot and go a little bit higher up because I would try to pull down that ball.
Yeah.
It got hit. It got hit hard. It would be straight and it would just go like that perfectly right into a barrel and it would be a double. Like, man, I just worked so hard to get this guy to 0-2 and I'm trying to gas it up when I don't have to.
Yeah. Well, and what pitches do you throw, Christian, kind of velocity-wise, where are you at now?
So I'm actually throwing kind of that 87 to 90 range right there, that upper 80s, consistently doing like the 87, 88. And I'm just living around the zone. You know, I'm about like really low 3/4 now.
Yeah.
So, and then I'll come in, I'll do like kind of, I learned this from some of the Japanese pitchers that I've been watching on YouTube, but they do a kick with their lead leg, and it's a little back kick.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a slide step, but in my opinion, it's more effective because you get that left leg. I'm a righty pitcher, so you get the left leg and you kick it behind your right and it's able to do an effective slide step. And I actually throw lower from that slot and all. And I was throwing that about 84 to 86.
Huh.
So, and it would jump on guys because it surprises them. They never seen a leg like that. You know who does it actually? Ryan Thompson.
Yeah, he kind of does. Okay, I could see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he does something like that. And I personally, it like is able to clear the hips and get your arm to get behind the body and really stay back, you know, and just whip it.
You know, and then, you know, like we talk about too, like in the show, like perceived velocity too, right? And that's where, you know, like 88 from your slot, honestly, from a hitter standpoint, probably looks like 93, 94, like from an over the top, right? And a lot of sidearm guys get stuck with that, right? You know, radar gun readings. And like my biggest thing is like the hitter is going to dictate how comfortable he is facing you, right? So like you could be 82 from a lower slot, but the hitter, his reaction, it's like he's throwing 89, right? 88, 90, just from his reaction, right? So
exactly. A perceived velocity is for real, right? There because there's plenty of guys that we had coming to Banana Ball and coming to the USPBL that threw mid-90s, but their ERAs did not show that. It was like, and every single time that people would step in the box, they'd be happy to face these guys.
Yeah, it's just, it's flat, right? Like,
yeah, they just say, oh, we just see it so well. You know, it's flat, it's over the top. It's kind of what we train for to see. So all these guys are trained to see a stock righty, stock righty that throws hard, you know?
That's perfect.
And the reaction time for all the players as we're getting older in this game of baseball and we're getting more advanced, I feels like this reaction time for people is getting even quicker, you know? So they're just turning on balls that are 99 inside that.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. Like, I don't even know how people did that. Like those were legends back in the day that were able to do something like that. Now everyone's able to, not everyone, but the top guys are able to do something like that.
Yeah.
With like,
yeah, it's been interesting to kind of see the game like kind of change that way, right? Or like the velocity part, but even just the bat, like the way it's coming off the bat too. It's like exit velo. It's crazy.
Exactly. So you need to get more ground balls, you know, get under that bat.
Yeah.
Get that sinker going.
Well, you know, and then what does it look like kind of coming up like next year, like kind of world stop wise? Like, do you guys have any announcements yet or know where you're going?
Yeah, we have our full schedule out. We had a little draft show last week, and we are playing at 6 MLB stadiums next year, which is Minute Maid Park, Houston Astros, National Stadium. We are going to, I'm trying to remember all of them, so bear with me. We're going to Marlins Stadium. We're going to Fenway, which is a huge deal for us. We're trying to go there forever. Man, I can't remember the rest right now. I'm about to look it up. But well,
Bill Lee is going to be going back to Fenway.
Bill Lee will, I hope he pitches in Fenway. He needs to pitch there. You know, it's just such a blessing that these guys, you know, everyone in this Bananas organization comes from some kind of adversity. All these guys have such a crazy story, and it makes sense on why they're there, because a lot of these guys have been cut, they have been hurt, they have been told they're not good enough, they have like they have just played on stilts their whole life. Like, and all these guys are here, and we are a collected group of the island of misfit toys that make the greatest show in sports happen.
So yeah, no, that's,
next year, I mean, the stops are endless. We're going February to October, and I can't wait. We're going to impact a million people. We're going to see a million people next year as fans in these
stadiums.
That's
awesome, man. That's very cool.
Yeah, I hope you guys can make it out to one.
Are you going to come to Canada at all? Or
no, not yet. The one closest of we'll get to Canada is Buffalo, New York.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, definitely. We'll. Yeah. Or actually go to Savannah.
That's more on your guys' side.
I did throw a no-hitter at University in Savannah, so maybe I'm due to go back there.
Hey, there you go.
There you go. I forget whatever it was. There's like a not one of the main. It wasn't even Savannah State, but there's like a technical college there or something, or like not a strong baseball program.
Yeah.
The scout. I'll take it.
That's hilarious.
I think I was literally throwing fastballs right down the middle, and like I don't think I threw many. I maybe two off speed and threw a no hitter. I'm like, oh, that was way too easy.
That's awesome. Hey, that's sidearm pitching right there.
That's funny.
I love it, man. I just remember the two stadiums too. Well, you just reminded me for some reason with that, but it's the Phillies place in San Francisco.
Okay. So, yeah. Nice.
And some cool areas, man. Hope to get you guys out there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess, Christian, like, what would be your favorite part about pitching sidearm?
My favorite part about it is knowing, like, that I don't throw as hard as people, but watching me blow a fastball right by someone like that. It is the most satisfying thing in the world. Right there. When you just absolutely gas someone up on 88. It's like, oh yeah. You got no chance, buddy.
My favorite too is like they'll come back to the dugout and just tell, you know, oh, that guy's throwing so slow. Or like just
blew. Exactly. They'll make some excuse up and everything. And you know, my favorite pitch ever that I've been throwing has been my slider too. I call it Slippery Lizard. That thing is wicked, and people come up to me after they face me like, I've never seen a ball move like that. And they're just pissed, mad. And it's from sidearm pitching. You can't throw that kind of pitch because it breaks horizontal completely. A lot of people are starting to use it now. They're calling it slutter or something like that.
The sweeper, like whatever.
But man, like to fully get a good one that's the horizontal across the zone. You got
that frisbee slider. It's fun, man.
Frisbee slider. Exactly. That's my favorite. You know, those just throwing those two pitches by people's bats. That's satisfying.
And then, Christian, it's just time for our ninth inning call to the bullpen. So just going to be some random questions just to learn a little bit more about you.
Let's do it.
Favorite NHL team?
All right. So my girlfriend's going to be pissed about this, but – because she just got a job with the Red Wings. Uh-oh. But I'm a diehard Panthers fan, you know. I was going to the games. Now, I haven't been to a game in forever, but I'm going up there in November, Red Wings versus Panthers, because I'm supporting those boys.
Favorite travel destination?
Man, it's got to be Key Largo, Florida. Yep. You know, I big spear fisherman, big diver, big fisher. And I love just being over there.
Nice. All-time favorite professional wrestler?
Oh, Ric Flair. Yep. Ric Flair. You know, that nature boy mentality, man. Woo! Wheeling, dealing, son of a gun. Oh, man. That guy's electric.
Have you got to meet him?
I did. I met him in Tampa. Yeah. I was at a bachelor party, and I looked over – and I saw this man just sitting there with his wife and his granddaughter. I was like, oh my gosh, guys, that's Ric Flair. And the best part of it was that a couple months earlier, I did a Ric Flair impersonation coming to the mound and ripped off my jersey, you know, and I was in underwear and everything was hilarious. So I showed him the video and he was dying laughing because he had seen it already like a couple of times. And when I showed him, he was like, that's you? Yeah, so I got his number on my phone now, and I'm just waiting for him to come out to a game because he's excited.
Favorite baseball movie of all time?
Major League, man. Major League for sure. When I first saw Wild Thing, Rick Vaughn, I said, yeah, that's what pitching's all about right there.
Then these next three questions, man, like if you could take anyone dead or alive, and the first one would be to MLB baseball game.
I would take my grandmother.
Yep.
You know, she had unfortunately passed away when I was in high school, but she had loved the game of baseball so much, and she never really got a chance to see me excel in this game. So just being able to share a baseball moment, I never got to see a game with her. So just being able to share that kind of moment with her, because I had seen her a couple times being out there and struggling on the mound. I would look to the crowd and some way I'd see her in angel form of herself. So I'd love to get her out to a game, you know?
Nice. For a round of golf.
Will Ferrell.
Yeah. That'd be...
it was tour, but I'm going with Will Ferrell, man.
that'd be an interesting round.
Yes, for sure.
And then last one, just out to the bar for like some drinks.
The Rock, man. Dwayne Johnson. I'd love to pick his brain because I kind of want to follow his same career path and use Banana Ball as my WWE.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been an interesting guy. Like, you know, like even just myself being from Calgary, like he was in the CFL and got released, right? And just to see him, like even just I've met some guys that went to training camp with him, and like just to see what he's done, it's impressive. Hey, like, yeah, and the whole entertainment side of it, right? And like that's the part about I get that very impressive.
Yeah, you know, they all call him the Rock, man. I want everyone to be saying that's Mr. Electric.
And then, you know, Christian, if you could be an Olympian in any sport other than baseball, summer or winter, what sport would you like to do?
Snowboarding.
Yeah,
100%. I grew up in Miami, so we never have any snow, but I've been snowboarding 3 times, and I'm a little daredevil when it comes to that, little stunt man, and I would go on those black diamonds and those blacks all the time, and I would just be carving. Even if I fall, I didn't care.
You didn't,
because I thought it was just the coolest rush ever, just going through that snow.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you're definitely more than welcome. You can come to Canada and experience more snow if you want.
Hey, don't tell me with a good time now, because I'll do it.
And then lastly, Christian, just going to test your teammates here. Do you remember like the name of your Florida International teammate? He made his MLB debut this year.
Logan Allen, man. That was our ace.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was doing both, I saw.
Yeah.
He could hit and pitch.
That's a freak athlete right there, because you know what? That is a perfect example of an actual pitcher. And a guy that could hit as well. A perfect two-way guy. He did it backwards, though. He was a lefty pitcher and a righty bat. The other way, a lot of people look for more. But when pitching, you know, he would sit 90-92, but he would spot up so well. And he's our Friday guy. He would spot up so well, hit every single corner of that plate. And then he would break in that changeup that would just have guys out in front. You know, he was so crafty, and he would still have about 12 strikeouts a game.
Yeah. You know,
I call him crafty even though he was throwing 90. He's doing that right there for Guardians, and it was working. And then he would go, and he'd be our two-hole hitter, and he'd go and hit a home run in the first inning, and we'd win the game 1-0. I was like, who is this guy? And this guy, he's 5'10". So, and when I first got there, I was like, this is our ace. I was like, you know, solid build, but he's a smaller guy, had no real muscle to him, but he's out there and he's crushing baseballs and he's throwing the ball right by guys and no one has a shot.
Oh,
you know, it makes sense why he got out there. And he worked his butt off. Let me tell you, he worked really hard because he just wanted to prove it to everyone that he could do it despite how he looked, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the fun thing about baseball too, right? Like, you never know, like, body type-wise or, like, you know, once you're on the mound, like, it really doesn't matter, right? You can be whatever. I mean, obviously, you can't teach size, right? Like, even from a scouting standpoint, I'm learning that. But
and you can't
you can't teach. There's some other stuff that you can't teach, right? For sure. No, I appreciate you coming on, Chris. Is there any shout-outs before we sign off?
Oh, man, just shout out to y'all. Shout out you know, you guys came to me a couple of years back. And wait, how many years back was that now, too?
Is that the camp?
Yeah, the camp.
Last year.
Last year? My gosh, dude, I've done so much.
Oh, you've
crazy. You guys came to me last year, and I've been such a big fan of y'all because the way that you guys have been preaching the Sidearm Nation and be proud to be a sidearm pitcher, you know, I'm proud of it. I think everyone should be. I know guys in my past that have been embarrassed about it. So I want to say a big shout out to y'all for, you know, involving this big community and getting all of us pitchers that throw a little weird together, you know, to share our stories. So shout out to y'all.
No, I appreciate it, man.
She said, "Do you come from a land down under? Where women glow and men plunder. Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover.